Hi, everyone. My name is Benno Papari, and this is the Songwriters on Process podcast. Since 2010, I've interviewed over 300 songwriters about, well, their songwriting process. I don't care about favorite cities, tour stories, favorite foods, or anything like that. My goal has always been to treat songwriters the same way that we treat poets and more traditional prose writers. They are writers, plain and simple. In these interviews, we go deep into the specifics of the writing process. This is no, hey, do you start with the lyrics of the music type of interview. Now, a little bit about me. I'm not a songwriter. In fact, I've never written a song in my life. I have a PhD in English language and literature, and I'm a former academic. So as a prose writer, I enjoy exploring how my process intersects with those of songwriters. This is an intelligent conversation about writing between two writers. And that, of course, means we talk a lot about books. The site features interviews across all genres, from metal to jazz, from country to that big category known as indie. You'll find a couple of A-list actors on the site and several members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as well. Now, I select songwriters to interview who fit into one of two categories. One, do I listen to them already? And two, if I don't, would they make for a compelling and intelligent interview? You can find these interviews across all podcast platforms, as well as at songwritersonpodcast.com. Do you have an idea for an interview or a comment about the site? Hit me up at ben@songwritersonprocess.com. Thanks for listening and enjoy. And today's episode is with Sabrina Teitelbaum, a.k.a. Blonde Shell. But before we go into talking about Blonde Shell, I want to let you know about some great interviews I have. If you have not listened to my interview with Jerry Harrison of Talking Heads, I posted that. Obviously, not many bands more influential than Talking Heads over the past 50 years. Check that one out. But upcoming, the big one, Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses will be on the podcast. That's happening next week. But upcoming interviews, more upcoming, I've got a lot of them. I need to stop scheduling these. MC Taylor of Hiss, Golden Messenger, Devendra Banhart, Johnny Pierce of the Drums, Genesis Owusu, huge fan of him. I saw him open up for Paramore. Fantastic. And Buffalo Nichols. So check those out. Upcoming, except for the Jerry Harrison one. That just happened. Anyway, so my Blonde Shell story, I was in the car within the past year. I must have been probably about a year ago. And a Blonde Shell song came on and I'd never heard it before. And it just I forgot what song it was. It's deep in my photos on my phone. But it was great. And so I took a screenshot of it, or I took a picture of the display on my car and said, wow, I got to check this out. So this was, I love this because I'm a huge Blonde Shell fan. Talking to her was very exciting. And, you know, we talked a lot about normalizing the writing process. By normalizing, we mean make it sound less precious. So intentionally doing things that make it less precious. So don't worry about where you write your lyrics. Don't worry about where you're writing. That if you make it, and I've heard this from songwriters, the less precious you make it, the more productive you are. And I tend to agree with that, but she has some interesting, an interesting perspective on how she normalizes it. Her goal is to have more joy in her songs. We talked about that too. She said, because when I'm happy, I don't feel the need to write as much. So we talked about now writing from a happier place. I'm always more inspired when I don't have the time. And boy, isn't that funny how we tend to, when we're running out of time, that's when the ideas come. So she's been in situations where she is the most inspired when ironically she needs more time. And know your process, but respect the mystery. And I love that, right? It's there's kind of that balance of yes, know what works for you, but also understand that the writing process is, or the songwriting process is mysterious. So check her out. Again, I'm a huge Blonde Shell fan, and the latest album, well, I should say her debut album, Blonde Shell, came out in April on Partisan Records, and I'm a big fan. So this was a lot of fun. We had a great discussion also about Mary Oliver and Mary Oliver's book, I believe Dog Songs is what it's called. I have to go back and check. That may be wrong, but anyway, and how she's a huge Mary Oliver fan. And I hear that a lot from songwriters as well. So not surprising there. Anyway, that is it. Enjoy my interview with Blondshell. I always start by asking, you know, how much writing do you think it's important to write or create in some fashion every day? I mean, I feel like I have this conversation a lot when I read about prose writers who say something like, you got to write every day. Like, doesn't matter how bad it is, you got to write. But songwriters, some reason, don't often feel that way. It's often, oh, when the mood strikes kind of thing. So where do you fall in that camp?
So coincidentally, I was actually having this conversation with somebody about this exact thing today.
Perfect.
Because I was saying that I want there to be more joy in my songs from like a lyrical place. I think a lot of the songs feel like fun to me, but there's not really joy that shows up a lot, because I think if I'm like having a really good day and I'm feeling really happy and whatever, I don't feel the need to write as much, because it comes more from like a self-soothing therapy place for me. So I think it would be nice to write every day, because I think I would probably get more material, but I just don't feel inspired to write every day. There's some people I think that feel like life's always happening. You're always introduced to new people, new things, and then they want to write about everything. But for me, it's like, it has to be something really intense for me to want to write about it.
So does that cause you anxiety? Like, do you feel like, oh, I'm feeling good, I should be writing, this is the time, I need to be writing now? I mean, are you going to maybe, is that something you'll, you know, that's going to be more conscious from now on?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I was having the conversation with my friend about it. Cause I was sort of like, things are fine. Things are good. How am I like, and I'm sort of approaching this new thing of like, I don't want the music to only have dread in it. There needs to be other stuff. And so I don't know, I'm sort of like figuring out what it looks like when I'm writing about things that aren't as intense as they were a couple years ago. Or maybe they're as intense, but it's in different ways.
Are there times though when it's too, when the emotions are too raw, too, you know, it's you're too much of a funk that it's difficult to write?
I think so. Not just from like a, you're down and you want to just like hang out, but from a, this hasn't been processed yet place. I think when something happens that you really want to write about, there's sort of like a pre-writing phase. And somebody told me one time when I was a lot younger, like when I was just starting to write songs, like 12 or something, someone told me, instead of saying like, oh, I have writer's block right now, to say I'm in the pre-writing phase. And I like that a lot, because it's sort of like you're processing what happened. You can't talk about it yet if you don't understand it. So and part of the processing of different events for me is by writing about it. But I think it takes some time. It's not always like, oh, I'm going through a breakup today, I'm going to write a song about that breakup today.
Yeah.
This friendship or whatever.
So do you deliberately give yourself distance from those things? Or do you feel like the rawness of it might make it more authentic, if that makes sense?
It's not so deliberate. And I think it's not so routine either. Like different events that I've written about, it's sort of taken different amounts of time for me to feel comfortable writing. And sometimes it's really not intentional. Like I'm thinking about songs from this record that came out in April, and I'm thinking about like Olympus or Salad or any of these songs that are about certain things that really, I mean, they're all about things that really happened. But some of these songs, like I didn't sit down to write them. I wasn't like, oh, I want a song about this person. It's like, I just was hanging out. I was practicing guitar. And then I just started talking about this thing.
So those instances when you're writing songs that are about specific events, are you less likely to revise those?
No, I think the way that I write, it's sort of like I'll get a bunch of different sections and then I'll have what I think is the chorus, what I think is the verse, what I think is the bridge. And then I'll go into the like demoing phase and I'll sort of feel like this song would be more effective if actually that bridge was the chorus and then I need to write a new bridge, or the first verse is actually the second verse. So I think I'm just as likely to edit kind of like no matter what it's about. But yeah, because that's more of like, then it's less for me and it's more like, if I were listening to this song, what would make it more effective?
Yeah. You also said something that I agree with 100%. And that is, you know, when I was teaching, I would tell my students, if you only think about the writing process taking place when you're literally putting pen to paper, you're never going to be able to write. But my writing process is always taking place when I'm walking, eating, sleeping, you know, anything like that. I may not be conscious of it, but those ideas are working their way. You know, there's still something going on up there in my head. And that is part of the process. But people, I think when they think about the writing process is only the actual physical act of writing, that's when they, if you think about it in that way, the more that always happening, it's always happening. I think that you're less likely to have anxiety from it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally agree. Cause it's like a productivity thing. You're like, oh, I'm not being productive towards this next album or whatever, unless I'm sitting down and trying to get the song out.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about is sort of like, I'm kind of productive just by existing and by sleeping and having a dream or by taking a walk. So yeah, I like to think about it that way too.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, I've always said that writer's block, you know, in quotes, or a rut happens, not because we don't know what to say, but because we don't know where to begin, you know? And I think, and again, I would tell my students this when I was teaching that it was, there's something up there. Don't feel like you have to start at the beginning. Start where you have something to say, and that momentum will keep you going. I just had this conversation before you. I interviewed Jerry Harrison of the Talking Heads.
Yeah, and I saw that you were doing that.
That's yeah, so we cool. talked about that. Same. He mentioned that same thing, that that momentum of just start it and the ideas will come. So I'm curious how you feel about that idea too.
I like that a lot. I heard that as a good rule of thumb, like you can write a first verse and a second verse, or no, you can write a first verse and a chorus, but then you should take that first verse and make it the second verse and write another first verse.
Ooh, I love that.
And I like it. I don't remember when I heard that. It was just like, I heard it a really long time ago and I think about it a lot. Because it can come out kind of clunky when you're wanting to just start a song, like that whole idea of I'm beginning from this place and setting a scene instead of like, I'm going to start just from the meat of it. I think it's nice to just like you don't always have to set up the most context in the world. You can just kind of say what you're feeling and that can be its own context for a song.
Yeah. It's funny because I think about also when I'm in a rut. And again, I'm a prose writer. I've never written a song in my life, so it's different. But I find that when I'm writing and I reach a standstill, what I do is I go to the paragraph before it and I start to edit. And I edit that paragraph. And I find that as I get to the one that I'm stuck in, it's like a boomerang or slingshot, whatever. It's like propels me into that. And then it's almost like a breakthrough. But I think the bigger picture is, you know, I want to talk about the process specifically because some songwriters tell me that the more precious they treat the process, the harder it is to write. So there are some that will say, you know, they don't have the fancy notebooks because the fancy notebooks makes it too precious. They'll write on the back of utility bills, of envelopes, of postcards, yeah. Like anything, you know, and that makes it that. Because it makes it less precious, there's less pressure.
Right.
So Yeah. Do you think that that's inversely proportional? I guess, you know, the less precious you treat it, ironically, the more output you'll get.
It doesn't feel that clear to me that I can make a statement being like it's inversely proportionate or proportional or it's directly proportional. I think I'm really familiar with that concept when it comes to shows, because I've dealt with stage fright and how you get comfortable and how you can really like with all these things, whether it's with songwriting, it's with a show, my goal is always just to be able to like get my personality across and get everything else out of the way, which is why I sort of like the way that I write is very conversational. It's like I'm saying the things I would say to a friend or to somebody that I'm very comfortable with.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, not all the time, but definitely sometimes if I'm adding elements of like making it a big deal, that gets in the way of being myself. So I really recognize that with shows. Like if I'm playing a show, I remember I was playing in LA a couple weeks ago and my friend was like, do you want me to do your hair before the show? And I was like, no, absolutely not. Because I don't want it to feel like a whole thing where like, if my hair is done, then it's become this thing that's like making me feel like kind of not myself. And I think it can be that way with writing. Like I don't write in a notebook. I write on my phone. And that's so every day. Like I'm writing in my notes app. And I think things like that can definitely make it feel more normal. And just like, this isn't that big of a deal. I'm going to have a song today and then I'll have a song tomorrow. Or if I don't have one tomorrow, I'll have one in 3 days or in a week. Because it's just like something in my phone.
So is there, yeah, is there anxiety then if you're not? I know for me, like for me, if I don't write for a few days, or it's more specifically when I don't read, like when I don't, if I don't read, I try to read every day. If I don't read, I start to get really, after a couple of days, it really bothers me, you know? Mm-hmm. And again, I try to write every day, but I don't, it's more that I just want to take things in and read. But when it comes to writing for you, if it's not happening, does that give you any kind of like, oh, I really should be writing, or is it, no, it'll happen eventually.
I try to tell myself, like the first thought is like, oh, I should be writing. And the second thought is it'll happen eventually. And if I try to force it, it's not going to come out how I want it to. And I've tried before. Sometimes it can be helpful to be like, I'm going to write something really bad today. Yeah. And I'm not going to do anything with it. It's just going to be like a bad verse and I'm going to have that. And so that can be helpful. Or like something that's really helpful for me is I'm going to set an hour aside to just practice guitar. And I'm just going to practice chords, new chords that I don't know that well. And then that always makes me want to write when I've taken the pressure off in that way.
The analogy I give is, you know, when I was growing up and my friends and I would watch like a football game, or it's the same thing. We'd watch football. When the game is over, the first thing we want to do is go play football. And it's like, it's the same thing. Or when I read a lot, that gets me motivated to write. So I think that's kind of what you're saying there.
I was thinking about the reading thing because I'm always really inspired when I'm reading, but I've been trying to understand what it is about that. And I don't think it's just like taking content in, because if it were that, I would feel as inspired by like TV and movies and things like that. Cause then you're getting more. But I think for me with reading, it like slows down my thinking process in a way. It makes me more present with like, here's how I could say what I want to say. It's just more step by step than like if you're watching a TV show, you're getting a million things at once.
So when you read, we'll talk more about the reading later. I'd love to talk reading with, you know, authors and things like that. But does that take away the reading experience for you if you feel like you're doing too close of a reading rather than just reading for the enjoyment of it?
I think it depends what it is. And I used to take notes all the time on what I was reading because I wanted to go back to it later. So I wanted to know, like, this thing was really moving for me. This thing really spoke to me. I want to remember that it was at this page, and I want to remember why it moved me so that I can feel that way again. And then at a certain point, I was like, this feels kind of counterproductive. Like, I'm maybe missing out on the experience that I could have by being kind of like, I don't know, by writing things down while I'm reading. So I've gone back and forth, but I think it depends what I'm reading. Like, if it's fiction, I want to not do that.
Yeah.
But if it's a memoir or if it's nonfiction or whatever, I can just kind of like, I want to be more deliberate and remember what I liked about it.
You mentioned earlier, just getting stuff down. Have you ever read the essay Shitty First Drafts by Anne Lamott?
No.
Anne Lamott is a novelist and it's from her book. The book is called Bird by Bird, but the essay is called Shitty First Drafts. And it's all that idea that's just, I mean, she, and I believe this 100%, the first draft is supposed to be atrocious. Just get all the ideas out there. But if you strive for perfection early on, it's going to slow the process down, but it'll kill your momentum as a thinker, as an idea generator, if you're focused too much on perfection early. So, you know, I'm a big, and most writers will tell you that, right? Just get it out and then revise it later. But Shitty First Drafts, it's a great essay. It's online.
Okay, I'll read it.
Yeah. Google it. It's typically the first thing that comes up.
I feel like I've heard about it, but I definitely haven't.
It's pretty, I mean, it's not a revolutionary idea, but it makes sense. But too many people think, oh, I don't have a lot of time, so I'll write one draft and make it perfect. Mm-hmm. And that always slows people down.
Or it's like embarrassment and feeling like if I write this first draft and I want to show it to someone, it has to be good.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. You mentioned your phone. So do you just have thousands of song ideas? You know, I get very anxious and songwriters tell me that they just have their notes app is filled with ideas and audio clips. And I think about, oh my gosh, how do you go back and find that one? So is your phone just filled with those?
It is. It's absolutely filled with those. It's filled with like dreams. Cause I have really vivid dreams all the time. And so it's full. My notes app is like full of dreams, full of lyric ideas and full of just like anything that I would want to use to write, but it's on the cloud. So I wouldn't lose it.
Right.
You know? But I have it in my phone, but if I want to find it, I just will search a keyword. So I'll remember the day I wrote it and I'll find it by the date. But yeah, I think part of it is that normalizing aspect that you were talking about, where like, if I'm writing in a nice journal, it's this sort of like, I don't know, kind of like this thing that I'm not familiar with. But if I'm writing in my phone, it's just this really normal everyday thing.
Right.
And I think part of it is also just, it's easier to write on the fly if you're typing than it is.
Yeah, practically. Right.
Yeah. It's just more practical that way.
Although it's funny. I mean, I could do a whole song website dedicated to the songwriters who do use like a pen and pen or a pencil, the type of pen, the color of ink, if it's a ballpoint, felt tip, like all these different kinds. They're so particular with that just because it's part of the ritual.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me. I mean, and I'm not like someone who's only using Google Calendar or something. Like when I write what my schedule is for the week, I do it in a notebook. So it's weird, but I think with writing, part of it is that like ideas will come kind of quickly. Like if I'm going to sit down and write a song, I'll have notes apps that are voice memos that are 10 minutes, but the song ends up being 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'll just like let it record for a while I'm saying random stuff.
Yeah. I interviewed Liz Phair a couple of years ago and she played me something that she, in the middle of the night, she woke up in a dream and played me some sound files she had just had. And it was this kind of really what you would expect someone to be saying or singing in the middle of the night. And it was so cool to hear that, the rawness of it. But it sounds like that's happening a lot too. Do you get a lot of song ideas, or what's happening in the dreams? Is it lyrics or melodies, or what is it exactly?
I think it's like a subconscious thing where my brain is processing things that I'm not processing Like if I'm running around all day, I'm not thinking about this interaction I had that's like maybe kind of weighing on me. I'm not consciously processing it. But then when I'm sleeping, things always come up and it's like much clearer. So then I wake up and I've done some of that kind of like subconscious work so that when I sit down to write, it kind of, it's like easier for that stuff to come out in a more formed way.
So when I, it's funny, speaking of sleep, so this is what sleep does for me. So if I finish something in the morning and I'm writing it, I finish something in the morning and I go to revise it later in the day, it's still too close to me. It's still too precious. I can't take any words out. But if I finish something at night and I wake up the next morning, I'm able to cut things so easy. It's like something about sleep. It's a reset. And I don't know what it is, but it's amazing. And I'll make that a part of my process. But it is incredible. I'll wake up the next morning. I don't need that. But
really?
if I did it that same day, it's just too close. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting that it's like we really separate things by that period of sleep.
Yeah. It's like a reset.
Yeah.
But you also mentioned something that I hear from songwriters, and that is how many ideas they get when they're doing mundane activities. Even things around the house, like vacuuming. Lauren Mayberry from Church has told me chopping vegetables, folding clothes, laundry, gardening, mowing the lawn.
It's always the shower because there's nothing else there.
Yes. But see, that's something. Yeah. I want to talk about that too, because I think that's a whole other issue with water and things like that. But there's something about the mundane. I'm like pushing a vacuum right here, but something about, you know, the mundane act, the monotony of that activity that requires no thought whatsoever, that lets those conscious ideas bubble to the surface if your mind is focused on an activity that requires none of that. So do you ever get ideas doing those mundane activities? Either can be anything.
Yes, but I think it's more like if there's music around, like if I'm listening to a song and I'm doing mundane things, or I think when I'm, my version of that is like, I'm going to play some chords. I'm like, practicing is really kind of boring for me. Just like if I'm trying to like, okay, I'm always trying to make my time better. So if I'm trying to practice with a metronome, that's not fun. I'm not like loving doing that. That's just sort of, I have to do this because I want to get better. So that feels really mundane for me. And if I'm doing that, I can be really inspired. But I don't know that it happens that much for me if I'm like doing stuff around the house, but it definitely happens a lot when I'm in the shower. I think because there's no phone, there's no computer, there's no one talking to me. Like I'm just, and that's, I guess that's a version of that. But you were saying you think that it has to do with water.
Well, you know, there was an article in the Washington Post, I need to read it, about the same exact topic 2 months ago. Why do ideas come to us when we're in the shower? You know, it's weird because I've had people, you know, get ideas when they're swimming. That's movement. That's another thing. But yeah, I guess what is it about the shower? Is it the solitude? Is that the only place we have where, you know, some measure of privacy? I don't know, because I don't see that as monotony the way that monotony is doing like a repetitive action.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of like sensory stuff. Also, there's something about, okay, maybe this is kind of out there, but I feel like when I took writing classes growing up, I was always hearing about how you're supposed to put limitations. Like, I'm only going to write one page, or I'm going to write about this one topic, because putting those limitations on kind of makes things, opens up space in a way. And maybe there's something about like being in a shower, in a bathroom, that's kind of a confined space, that is sort of like you're having to open up a space in your mind about different ideas and things you're thinking about.
I love it. That's great. I mean, if we want to go deeper, we can think about the psychoanalytic element of, you know, the water and all that kind of stuff. But I need to read the article, because it is something, you know, that I do hear a lot of, and it's where it's just a place of solitude. So maybe that's it. But I don't know if maybe the soothing element of the water.
Yeah.
Something about that too.
I want to read that article too.
Yeah, I'll get it to you somehow. And I haven't read it, but it just came out a few months ago. So it's funny you say this. So what I do is, so to write more efficiently, and this is a little bit of what you're talking about, is I will create a false deadline for myself. So a false deadline isn't, oh, let me, you know, start the stopwatch, write for an hour. How much can I get done? A false deadline is, you know, if I'm going somewhere at 2, I won't start writing until 1. Now, where I'm going has nothing to do with that project, but it's still a hard stop and I have to get it done. And I learned that about myself because we live in Washington, D.C., and I go to New York for work all the time, and I'll get more done on that 2.5 hour train ride than if I sat at home for 2.5 hours, because I know when I get to New York, I have to put my laptop away. That has changed my writing 100%. It's made me so much more productive, putting myself intentionally in those situations where I have to get things done because I've got to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Do you feel like so I like to do that also, where I'm sort of, just because I've noticed that I'm always more inspired when I don't have the time. Like,
yeah,
have to go to dinner at 7 and all of a sudden it's 6:30 and I'm like wanting to write this song. But then I'm always sort of like wanting to, I'm like, well, it's more important that I have a song. I'm going to want to push this dinner, like that kind of stuff. So it's hard. It's hard to find times that are like, it's enough time that you can get out what you want to get out, but it's like a small enough amount. It's a small enough window that you still feel that pressure. So it's kind of like an interesting balance.
So you recognize that about your process, that you get inspired when you're under pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so interesting. So do you deliberately put yourself in that situation then?
No, but maybe I should. I don't, because it's like painful to feel like I'm having this song that's starting to come out and now I need to stop.
Right.
Like I don't love that feeling of like, if I had another hour, I could get the song out. So I don't put myself in that position, but I find myself in that position a lot just because I'm like, oh, it's 6 PM. I'm going to I'm going to play guitar for a little bit and then I will get inspired.
I think it's important to know about your ritual. I mean, I think it's a balance, because if you treat the ritual too cut and dry, that it can be inhibiting. So for example, I like never write. I'll write in one chair, but I'll revise in the other. I never write and revise in the same chair. I find that distance, the distance between the revision process and the writing process, lets me see the writing differently. Mm-hmm. So I will write and revise in the same chair. There's other things that I do. My problem is that if I think, I don't write well in this place, so I'm not going to write there, then that can make it too, it's too channeling, right? Too confining. If you say, you don't write well on the road, so I'm not going to write well on the road. So I feel it's a balance of knowing what works, but not being too selective that you shut yourself off if those opportunities still arise. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's so important to know what works for you. And at the same time, I always want to respect the mystery of the whole thing a little bit. So I want to learn about it enough that I'm helping myself, making my environment conducive to writing more songs. But at the same time, I want to leave room for like, it kind of works how it works. And there's like a magic about the whole thing that's sort of like, I don't know why I won't write for a while and I won't feel inspired. And then all of a sudden I'll write a song, and having that song makes me want to have another song. And it's like, I don't know why that happened this month and not this month. And sometimes it's nice to just leave it at that. And sometimes it's nice to like go in and really figure out why it works the way it does.
So what is there a time of day, maybe favorite room, favorite chair, that where you tend to get your best writing done?
It's changed because I've moved. Like, I've lived in LA for 8 years and I've moved quite a bit just because I'm like figuring out where in LA I want to live, and I was in school for a bit, whatever. So it's definitely changed, but I have like certain instruments that I like writing with. Certain, like, I have two guitars that I really like to write with. And then I have other guitars that are sort of like, I have this because maybe I want to play it at a show, or I want to record with it, but I have like the writing guitars. So I guess that's my version of like a chair.
Yeah. Time of day, are you a morning or night person, or does that not matter?
So if I'm starting a song, it's usually going to start coming out at night, but then I'll wake up excited about it. And I'll be like, it's the best feeling when you wake up and you're like, oh, I wrote a song last night. I just remembered that. And then you listen to the voice memo and it's like still good, you know, because there are times where I wake up and I'm like, oh, that's so exciting. And then I listen and I'm like, I can't really still stand by that.
Right.
But if I still really like it, then I'll like want to edit right away, or I'll want to like write a second verse or whatever is left. I'll want to do that in the morning.
Ernest Hemingway always said that he would always stop writing at night when he knew he had something left in the tank, because he was terrified of waking up the next day with nothing to say. So, which I think takes tremendous discipline, but he would deliberately say, okay, you know, I'm going to stop now because I've got more to say, but I want to wake. It's kind of what you're saying there a little bit, is waking up that morning, next morning, with that good feeling of, oh, I've got something to work on. And he would do the same thing. But he would deliberately stop.
Yeah, that makes sense. I remember hearing somebody, I had a writing teacher who was married to a painter. And I remember her saying that her husband's favorite part of the process was like, he had some name for this part of the process, but it was when he could work on the painting for like 5 minutes and then leave and go do something and come back. And he would know that there was still, like, it was already outlined or something. So he could always come back and pick up the work. And sometimes I feel that way about the editing process. Like when I already have the chorus, I already have the verses, I already have the bridge, but maybe I need another line in the bridge. Maybe I need to edit something about the verses. Like that part is almost the easiest part of the process to me, because it's like you can have 20 minutes and make a dent. And then you leave your house, you come back, and then you can edit the other part and it takes 20 minutes or something.
So it's that feeling of knowing there's something else to do rather than, oh my gosh, where do I go from here?
Yeah. I guess it is that.
So the other thing that I want to ask you about is the role of movement to the process. And so I've actually written about this. I wrote about this in the Washington Post about 5 years ago. There's a very strong link between movement and higher order thinking, what they call executive functions. So, excuse me, what they did was they put people on treadmills for 20 minutes at about 60% max heart rate, which is not much more than a moderate walk. And then after that, administered a battery of tests to them that it measured higher order thinking. And they found that those people always scored higher than people that weren't on the treadmill, because there's a chemical in the brain called brain-derived neurotrophic factor that gets secreted through increased blood flow, which is exercise. So for about 90 minutes post-exercise, you're at that creative peak, like you're at your strongest. So what they discovered was that it's about there are parameters. 30 minutes is the ideal at 60% max heart rate. So the good news is it's
taking notes.
Yeah, I know.
30 minutes. Okay.
Yeah, no, I'll send you the article. I'll get you the article. So, okay. But it's the good news is it's not dose responsive. So 60 minutes isn't twice as good as 30, and 90% max heart rate isn't better than 60%. The exercise needs to be something that doesn't involve a lot of brain power. So they found that effect gets negated if you're walking in an urban environment because you're trying not to get hit by cars versus the woods. And they've also found that if you're doing things like playing like Wii Fit or any of those video games, like those things you can play, that negates it. You know, reading something intense will negate it as well. But the evidence is clear. I mean, it's been replicated. And it's fascinating to me because it has enormous implications for, like, you know, I'm a big runner anyway, but I don't run 2 hours a day. What I'll do is I'll run when I know that I'm going to be at my ebb. When it, I just know that, you know, it's not going to, you know, I'm just going to be at that low point. So, and even a walk, it just has to be 60% as a moderate walk. So I absolutely use that as a part of my process. So anyway, that's the research behind it. And it's fascinating stuff. But a lot of songwriters tell me that they get ideas when they're walking, running, hiking, biking, things like that. So I don't know. That's a long description. But what are your thoughts on that? Does it ever happen to you, maybe?
I feel better in general and more willing to be productive with my day if I have been outside and I've moved around. I have lived in an urban environment almost my entire life. I grew up in New York City, and the parts of LA that I have lived in since I've moved here are very densely populated parts of LA. It's not like I'm, you know, living somewhere where there's a ton of nature around me.
Yeah.
So I don't have a ton of experience. Like, I'm trying to think about times that I've been like walking on the beach or like hiking or something like that. But when I exercise, it's typically like I'm walking somewhere where I'm trying to not get hit by a car. Even if I'm not really thinking about it, I think my brain is probably doing that. So there's not a really clear, direct relationship for me. But what I do know is that, like, so we had the storm here the other day.
Right.
Hurricane that was a pretty mild storm, but it was Sunday and I was home all day. I didn't leave the house because of the weather and what, I mean, I walked my dog, but it was like brief a couple times. And I didn't feel like I wanted to do much because I was just kind of like laying around all day. And if I'm moving and I'm getting a ton of blood flow and whatever, I will just, I know that I'll feel better. So I'm sure there's a relationship between that and wanting to write, but it's not so clear just because of where I've lived.
And yeah, part of that is, I think, just the, if it makes you, if you feel better, you're more likely to probably write anyway, right? I
mean, yeah.
So I think there's that. It's interesting, though. The other thing is that they found that, I don't think I mentioned this, but that treadmills are not as effective as like stationary bikes, because on a treadmill, there's a little bit of your brain that's trying to maintain balance.
Oh, interesting. So, but yeah, like you can't walk too fast because then you could hit the thing in front of you.
Right. Yeah. And then you're on YouTube, you know, for the people, you know, the, all the videos, people that fall backwards, but
yeah, I know it, the videos.
Yeah. It has enormous implications for creativity. And I think when I mention it to songwriters, it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I go running and then I come back and I just want to write, or I get, you know, or I've had people say they get song ideas on hikes, and the hikes, the cadence of the hike actually turns out mirrors the tempo of the song. Who do you like to read? Favorite writers, genres, things like that?
Well, right now I'm obsessed with Mary Oliver.
I hear Mary Oliver a lot.
Yeah. I mean, that's just like, I think, well, I started reading Dog Songs. Do you know that book of poems?
No. By her?
By her, yeah.
Okay, no.
It's the most beautiful book. And I read it maybe 6 weeks ago, right before I went on tour, because I'm so in love with my dog. And when I want to write about him, it just doesn't come out. It doesn't come out well. Like, it's kind of, I don't know. It's such a pure relationship. And I think songs can be good when there's conflict or there's like multiple feelings going on at once that don't make sense together. And I was sort of like wanting to read something about dogs that, like, somebody who actually was able to do it and write about the relationship with dogs in a way that wasn't cheesy or whatever. And so I'm just obsessed with Mary Oliver right now because of that book. And I would recommend it.
It's down.
Just like, it's so easy to trivialize that kind of relationship. Everyone loves their dog, man's best friend, like whatever. But it's such a deep type of relationship. And she writes about it in a real, in a way that just really spoke to me. So I'm reading poetry right now, but when I was writing my album, I was reading a lot of this one genre of like contemporary memoir, which I think started with On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous. Did you read it?
No. Who's that by?
Ocean Vuong.
Oh, okay.
And I read that book and it was just the type of prose in it that really spoke to me. But there was a sort of genre of like young women living alone, dealing with their trauma and just dealing with healing. And there were a lot of books that I read that were sort of in that world. Like there's a book called Objects of Desire by Claire Sestanovich, Luster by Raven Leilani, Everything by Carmen Maria Machado. So Her Body and Other Parties, Dream House, like all those sort of memoirs and short story books about being a young woman right now. All of those things were really interesting to me when I was making my album. So I'm sort of like, right now I'm reading about dogs, but I want to find the next thing that feels really inspiring to me and feels like it makes me want to write songs.
So a great memoir I read, fantastic, is a book called Miracle Country by Kendra Attleywork. I'll put this in the chat later. But she grew up in a very small town in Sierra Nevada, California, called Bishop. And it's I first read her because she had an essay in the Best American Essays book, which is a book put out every year. And she wrote it when she was getting her MFA. So she was a graduate student. And it's unbelievable. But the book intertwines her memoir growing up in Bishop and also, you know, it, you know, the death of one of her parents and all those kind of things. But the story is also told in perspective of this part of Northern California that is going through this severe drought because it's LA County owns most of that county up in Northern California. That's where they get their water from, literally get their water from there. So it's this whole issue of climate change, but growing up in a small town, and she is an unbelievable writer.
Okay, I so want to read it. Yeah, send it in the chat.
Yeah. So it's a memoir, but also that kind of environmental aspect to it. And she is, so I've emailed with her a few times because she was in a, she like played in some band when she was in college, just like a, you know, nothing big, but she talks about her influences, musical influences and things like that. But if you follow her on Instagram, she plays the harp and so it's really cool anyway. So do those writers have a direct influence on your songwriting?
Yeah, like, I think there's two separate things. There's the memoirs and then there's also short stories. And I think there's something about the short stories that I was reading in that time, like Her Body and Other Parties, that book that I mentioned, that there's this like absurdity to the stories. And I was really kind of influenced by that because I was like, that's the sort of thing where you don't have to start from somewhere that makes that much sense. Like you don't, that idea of like, you don't have to start with all of this context, like once upon a time, blah, 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 here, we're in this place. And then this thing is happening. It's like, you're just kind of getting to these really absurd situations really quickly. And I wanted the songs to sort of feel like that. So I think that was one way, but also just with memoirs, there's something about taking your own experiences seriously enough to write about them. And write about the actual intensity that you felt as opposed to kind of playing it down and being like, yeah, this thing happened to me, but worse things have happened. There's sort of like, there's something about that I was really moved by with just taking your own experiences seriously and feeling like I'm going to talk about this for all of the ways that it impacted me. I'm not going to dull it down. I'm not going to just sort of brush it off. Like I'm going to sit with these feelings that were really heavy, or I was really angry, I was really anxious or whatever. I'm just going to like own it and treat it with respect. And I think I got a lot of that from reading a lot of memoirs in the last couple of years.
So my follow-up to that is, after you read those, does that directly inspire you to write right away? You know, you go from reading those to directly writing.
I don't think it's that direct. I think I was reading a lot, and I started reading a lot of memoirs just because I had a lot of time in COVID. And I think I just sat with it for a while. I wasn't so focused on writing. I was like, I'm just enjoying reading this stuff right now. And then I think it just slowly changed things for me, perspective. It changed the way that I relate to my own story. And then that came out in the writing whenever I was inspired. And I did sit down to write songs.
And that's it for today's episode. Check back in a couple of weeks for a new episode. I do try to post these every 2 weeks, sometimes with more frequency, sometimes with less. A lot of that depends on my work commitments, my family commitments, and also when artists can talk to me. It's not easy to get these interviews. Speaking of interviews, did you know this is a relatively new podcast? I only started podcasting about a year ago. Well, depending on when you're listening to this, I should say 2022. But from 2010 to 2022, all of my interviews were transcribed, and they are all there archived for you to go down that deep rabbit hole. So if you go to songwritersonpodcast.com and click on From the Archives in the top, at the top, you'll see all of those transcribed interviews. I think there's over 200. So go down that rabbit hole. There's a lot of great interviews there. But you'll find all of those there. Again, the podcast itself is relatively recent, so there's a lot of reading you need to be catching up on with those old interviews. Speaking of interviews, if you have suggestions for interview subjects or want to comment or complain, anything like that, email me at ben@songwritersonprocess.com. That's ben@songwritersonprocess.com. And that's it for today's episode. This wraps it up. Thank you very much for listening, and have a good one.